You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Shantina Vernon. Shantina, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Brainerd, for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Shantina, you have really a number of aspects to how you work. You have a social practice and all the work that you do in theater and music. So let's begin with your work. Could be what you're currently working on, but in terms of your own work, because that really sets the groundwork, I think, for a lot of your social practice work. What are you working on now or recently in terms of your practice, your personal practice?
Well, there are two things that I'm working on right now. The first is the finishing of a film, a short film called Girl Justice. It's a film that really looks at the pathways for girls and gender nonconforming youth of color into the juvenile justice system. And we started shooting that back in February, just wrapped post-production and are getting ready for a series of screenings and festivals and that kind of thing. But it's a narrative film, but it sort of pushes the form a little bit because it includes some statistical data in the way that the story is actually told, and it's split into three parts, done as a triptych, three protagonists, all of them in unique situations and situations that in some way connect them to juvenile justice and the system.
Shantina, to discuss the film a little bit more, can you tell me a little bit about what the audience will take away from the film, what they're learning or understanding more about? I know this dovetails into your social practice as well, but to talk about what the audience is learning from this film, I'd love to hear more about.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. I think what the audience will learn, girls and queer and trans youth are often criminalized around sexuality and gender. So I think that the film will help people sort of understand that. It will really shed some light on the sexual abuse to prison pipeline that I don't think as many people are aware of. And also, just a sense of like how trans and queer youth are criminalized around gender and sexuality as well. So all of those issues are raised in the film. But I think even more importantly than that, obviously there's making folks aware of that, of those issues. But then it's also it culminates with all of the youth in their own voices, speaking their stories or speaking to the stories of their peers in an open mic scene. And that really is about the power of art and story to really unify what it is to have youth-led and community spaces where young people can come and can share and be themselves and support one another. All of those things are present in the film too. And I think those are important takeaways as we sort of are in the middle of this moment of addressing various issues around criminal justice reform as it relates to juvenile justice, the power of young people to have agency, to reconnect with a sense of agency in their lives is one that is particularly important to me.
Yeah, that's very powerful, and it's something that I'm learning more about. There was a woman I interviewed a while ago, Chavisa Woods, who talked a lot about LGBTQ youth throughout the country and how so many of the homeless population of young kids are gay or somewhere on that spectrum of LGBTQ. And I had never known that before. And it was kind of shocking to hear that. And you're also talking about their engagement with a criminal justice system. You said they're often criminalized or something like that. What did you mean by that? That population of the LGBTQ kids who are the homeless population is often gay or in that spectrum, that there's also criminal fallout from that as well?
Yes, it's true. I mean, in the school-to-prison pipeline, right, we're talking about administrators and teachers who with their own biases or lack of understanding around gender and sexuality, often choose to target the behavior of queer and trans youth, right, criminalizing them because of that behavior, assigning all kinds of ideas and beliefs to that behavior, and then that becomes a means by which they are, you know, their first contact with the criminal justice system, right? Whether it's suspension or more likely to be sent to detention, all of those issues coalesce around the fact that they are trans and queer youth. Same is true for girls of color, Black girls, Native, Latinx. Like I feel like it's an issue and a theme that is rarely looked at. A lot of what our efforts in terms of criminal justice reform has sort of focused on how do we support and protect our boys, and I agree that that is needed, but what I often hear in some of these spaces is that by addressing the issues related to boys and men, that somehow, it will, for lack of a better phrase, trickle down to address whatever the needs and concerns are for girls of color and for our queer and trans youth. And that is absolutely not true. And so this film really is just about really amplifying this as an issue and giving it some real care, because that's in fact what it needs. Because right now, girls and women and queer and trans youth are sort of like the fastest rising, girls are the fastest rising prison population, girls and women. And trans youth are overly represented in the system. While they only, I think it's something like 2-3% in terms of like youth population, they are represented in the criminal justice system at a rate of about 13-15%.
Wow.
So tell me a little bit about it. I want to talk more about this and other projects you're doing related to this, but to move backwards a little bit, I'd love to talk about the solo show you produced called Wanted, which was a coming-of-age story and also about your own experience. Can you tell me a little bit about Wanted and in your experience with the criminal justice system and how that colors a little bit what you're doing?
Yeah, well, so much of my so much of my work as it relates to the juvenile justice system is sort of rooted in the fact that in my early years I had my own experience with the juvenile justice system at about 10 years old, and Wanted was a very early sort of workshop draft of what that story might be like to share, and it was connected to a bunch of different things. I was looking at my origin story, my sort of family story, how it was that I came to be adopted. I was adopted within my family, but adopted by an older couple in my family. My father was 90 years old when I was adopted as a toddler. So when I say older, I really mean significant difference generationally. And so Wanted really looks at the connection between origin stories, that sense of belonging that I was seeking in those early years growing up in that small town, and ultimately how I was sort of looking for a way to feel wanted and to feel like I had possibility and, potential to be something in this place where that was not always reflected back to me. So Wanted really looks at that. It's connected to the work that I'm doing now in the sense that I'm working on Forging Ahead, which is, I would say, kind of a part two of that story, which sort of flips it around. Now that I have been working in policy, working in arts education, working with lots of arts-based alternatives to incarceration programs, I'm really looking at this new lens I have of being on one side of it as a young person, who was myself incarcerated, and now having this adult perspective that is about having worked in all facets of the system and trying to figure out how those stories connect, right? And really elevating the story a little bit, using both composites, so it won't be necessarily Anna DeVere-Smith style, where it's sort of taken straight from interviews, but there will be composites that are sort of built from some of the early interviews that I have, and scenes and stories, and original music. So that's sort of what I'm working on in trying to put this play together. I'm not really sure what it is yet. I've been working on it probably for the last year and a half or so, but I'm getting a sense of it, and we're preparing to workshop it and begin to get it up on its feet. So forging ahead is that. Also because I think people make the assumption that, oh, you have an experience in your early years with the criminal justice system, but you know, through art and through creativity, you sort of move past it, and it always informs your lens, and it always informs your life and the way that you move through the world. So really wanting to draw some connections to some things that I figured out about myself as an adult, right, and really being able to look back to those early years and seeing a through line, right? So that's sort of, yeah, that's the long and short of the story.
That's powerful. And to talk a little bit, just the specifics, to understand what was your experience, if you don't mind talking about that, in Wanted, when you describe being incarcerated, what happened to you that caused that?
Well, I grew up, like I said, having grown up in a household with older parents, I was often, I have a sibling that is, that they adopted before me. There's about a 25-year age difference between the two of us. So for all intents and purposes, I grew up as an only child, and in a predominantly Mexican neighborhood. My parents both worked all the way up until their 90s, and I was often exposed to some of the wealthier families and their houses on the north side of town. So I think that, you know, it really started when I was about 8 years old. You think about the rise of, because when I talk about Wanted, I talk about it as a play about adoption, celebrity, and criminality. Because at the time in the 80s, we had the megastar, right? There was the Michael Jackson, the Tina Turners, the Whitney Houstons of the world. And so growing up in that small town, those were my markers for what success, for what it would mean
right.
to be desired, right? So that sort of roots itself in you. And for me, it started me on this path thinking like, huh, maybe my way out of this small town is to sing and to really kind of like just reach for the highest plateau. But I didn't have the resources to do that kind of reaching. And I promptly began my investigation of like, how do I get signed to a record label? And how do I get in touch with Arista? And, you know, so I started to do all of these things. How do I have, you know, how do I remake myself in terms of fashion, you know? So all of those things were things I was aspiring to do. And the ways that I funded them was that I went with my father one day to his work, and I took one of the checkbooks of his employer, and you know, and very, because I would see him get paid and go to the bank, and we'd drop off this, you know, slip of paper, and they would return money, and you know, so in my mind I thought, oh, this is easy, you know, and that's what I set out doing. Well, you know, it wasn't long before I was put on probation, and then not long after that I violated that probation by writing another check, and so ended up in detention. I spent 6 months in a juvenile detention center because I think two things were at play. We had a prosecuting attorney in that county that really was never interested in the question of why a child might be acting out or behaving in such a way. It was really just punitive practices as it related to most of the black and brown youth in that county. And mine was no different. My situation was no different. So while I was in detention for those 6 months, he sought to have me incarcerated until I was 18. He wanted me moved from the youth commission, the detention center where I was placed, to the Texas Youth Commission, which I don't know if it even exists now as that, but that was a sort of maximum security facility for youth at the time. And so was that prosecuting attorney was moving to have me there until I was 18. And so it was really a series of, an attorney from Dallas taking our case pro bono, us finding the right psychologist to work with me and my family. All of those things sort of coalesced to mean that I only had to spend a year in a children's home while my parents were sort of assessed for whether or not they were fit or whether or not they were negligent in these instances. My parents ended up having to do community service during that time, which, you know, it's hard for anybody to think about, but think about somebody who's 92 or 93 years old having to do community service for something, that a 10-year-old has done, and nobody's really contextualizing it for me at all. Nobody's really sort of saying, right, hey, so rather than do this, let's figure out something else. Let's find a way to channel whatever this creative output is in the direction of something better, right? Nobody was able to look at it and identify it as, in my own way, it's sort of like probably two things, a cry for help in some ways, but also a kind of like first act of resistance to what the status quo around me was, right? I wanted more for myself and for my family, ultimately. And so that's how it ended, is that after I spent a year there, I was returned home to my family. But at that point, my mother just didn't feel like it was safe. So I ended up moving to Dallas and very quickly became engaged in lots of arts and creative programs, ended up going to a performing arts high school, and that just really changed the path for me overall. And ultimately, I think that is why I'm here, and it's why I do the work that I do.
And the town that you were in, thanks so much for sharing that, was just outside of Dallas, Texas? Is that where the small town, you were saying that?
Yeah,
you...
Yeah, small town about 65 miles south of Lubbock. Think about like the Permian Basin, Midland, Odessa. So it's just a town called Lamesa is what that town is called. It's actually Lamesa, but so many people just mangled the name that it became Lamesa, but part of the... Oh, yeah. West Texas, think West Texas, oil country, cotton fields. There's a population maybe of about 9,000 people at the time that I was growing up there.
So I want to talk about the Rauschenberg fellowship that you have, or the Visionary Justice Story Lab. But is there something else we should talk about in terms of your music? Because you were also saying, I think, in the film and also in Wanted, I mean, you're a musician and a songwriter and a singer, much like your dream that you were just mentioning, right? That happened. So before we get into the more about the Visionary Justice Story Lab, that singing itself sounds like a breakthrough in the context of what you were talking about. It was, not to be too cliche, but a dream realized as an artist.
Yeah, no, it's true. I spent a lot of time, I would say, late 90s, early 2000s, did a lot of music, played with some bands that I had both in New York. I've worked with a ton of musicians here in Seattle, and I still do music. I think, though, what I have found, the culture of... gig culture in the States is challenging. It's challenging for anybody, but I think it's especially challenging as you sort of age out of it. And so I do music now, but I do music solely connected to plays and to, scoring things and projects that I'm working on. But absolutely, music is such a vital part of how I move through the world and how I see the world. Almost any place that I can incorporate it, I do. Little known fact, every now and then I do record songs randomly. I recorded a couple of house songs a year and a half ago and just recently discovered that they are charting in places like Montreal in the UK, because there's this sort of like growing house scene. And so I still do music, but I just do it in a way that feels like I can be in front of it. I can be in control of it. I don't really pursue it as a sort of solo career path in the same way anymore.
So tell me a little bit about the Visionary Justice Story Lab, because part of what's exciting about that is you have a 2016 to 18 Rauschenberg Artist as Activist Fellow that's specifically supporting your program, right? As a founding creative director of the Visionary Justice Story Lab.
Yeah, I think so. So speaking about story, talking about solo shows, I've worked as a playwright, written 6 plays that have kind of moved around various in aspects of regional theater. And so really, I think about story as something to be centered and as an organizing tool. And so the Visionary Justice Story Lab is a collective or a collaboratory, if you will, of a couple of multidisciplinary artists and also artists that have social justice as a core part of their social practice, who gather and really try to address issues of structural racism, really looking at healing justice, and also connecting communities to not just like the system, but really helping them understand how their stories are connected to their sense of agency and movement building, right? So that's what we do with the lab, and it's done through different kinds of art projects. We sort of evolve these art projects very particular to whoever, to the communities that we're working with, right? So some examples, I do the Unlocked Healing Justice Workshop, and Unlocked really makes connections between mind prisons, body prisons, and structural prisons, right? So really kind of understanding what the culture of the prison industrial complex and this sort of like culture of criminalizing black and brown bodies, what it does to communities at multiple levels, not just in terms of the people who are incarcerated, but also in terms of what the impact it has on those who are left behind. How do we address the deficits? How do we address our own need for healing? How do we address the shame that we feel? But also, how do we connect those stories back to structural racism, the actual systems that are in place, so that people begin to kind of go, oh, it's not just a thing that I have brought upon myself. There are ways that this is connected to a larger story, and how can I, where do I fit? How can my story connect me to a path for justice and to a path for being active in movement building and organizing as part of the resistance? And also we center art and culture because I believe that the imagination is necessary in this liberation work, right? You can't just only be in response to or in resistance to, but we also have to have a space where we can dream and imagine new possibilities. And having art and culture and creative tools as a way to engage communities about some of these really challenging issues makes all the difference in terms of what they walk away understanding about their own sense of agency and also how they understand what's going on sort of in the world at large.
Absolutely, that's so powerful. And since part of the Visionary Justice Story Lab and the collaboratory as you talk about it. Is also working at times directly with incarcerated youth and engaging them and it seems like, especially in the context of the story you told and what the prosecutor was going for and how blind they were to what was actually what the context of your situation was and trying to help in a more constructive way. That's part of what's happening with the incarcerated youth that you're working, isn't it? Isn't that part of the goal, which seems kind of,
Absolutely.
Like poetic justice coming from where your background in this is. So to just speak about that briefly, you're also drawing stories out of them and helping them understand their specific situation. So at the end of, let's say, a workshop with you, incarcerated you, ends up with what?
I think, so to be clear, we work with not just incarcerated youth, but also adults as well. Yeah. And for me, it's an important thing to mention that the idea is to use abolition as a framework, right? So it's not just, you know, there's these conversations about the criminal justice system, but they're so often siloed and completely disconnected to every other area, you know, and even to the point where people say, oh, you know, what do you mean abolition? You're just going to open the doors and let everyone out? And it's like, no, but understanding that if you're not addressing things like economic justice, if you're not addressing education, if you're not addressing environmental justice, if you're not addressing immigration, you know, you're not really looking at all of the parts, right? And so whether it's young people or adults that we're working with, it really is about helping to create a whole story, right? So it's not just like the focus on the story of the protagonist. It's also looking at who are our antagonists in culture and in society, right? How do they show up? What are the myriad of ways that they show up? And how those systems prevent us often from seeing our own options. A lot of times what we're dealing with in communities, I know that when I'm working in workshops, is a crisis of imagination. The circumstances are so dire and so challenging that, you know, I don't take it for granted that as an artist that has been working and doing what I've been doing in the ways that I've been working for 20 years, that I don't have the privilege of space and room for imagination, ways that I can look at my situation and turn it 360 degrees and then come up with possible alternatives. All communities are not the same because some communities have really been so ravaged by criminal justice, the criminal justice system, but also by like the constant chipping away at the things that make one feel human and one feel like their life has possibilities. And those are basic things, things like water, things like education, things like housing, you know. And if you don't have those, then of course you have an environment that is ripe for criminalizing folks and them feeling like they have absolutely nothing they can do. So when we do workshops, a large part of it is about addressing the traumas, not just the singular event traumas, but the systemic piece, really looking at it so that people walk away, one, with a sense of understanding about where they how they've used their agency in the circumstances that they're in and how they can use it differently in mobilizing towards liberation and in mobilizing towards their own freedom. That's what we want young people, adults, communities, the organizations that we work with. We want everyone to understand where you are in the cast of characters in this story that we're all sort of collectively telling.
That's so powerful and so important. Thanks for sharing that. And with the Rauschenberg Fellowship, is that just completing now? Was part of that fellowship to continue to develop the Visionary Justice Story Lab, or was that just outright support?
That fellowship was to develop it and to support it. It was born as a result of that seed grant. Not to be confused with their seed grant program, as part of the Artist Activist Program. And now it's about sustaining the support for these workshops and for growing it so that we can continue to do the work that we do.
Shantina, it's been wonderful talking to you about this. I appreciate your time. But before we go, I was going to ask you about what you're reading now, but is there anything else you want to say about this before we go that I should have asked or missed anything at all?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think this has been great. I hope that it really sort of connects all of the ways that my life, my work, social practice all kind of come together. And in terms of just what I'm reading, I am reading How We Get Free by Kianga Yamata Taylor, Black Feminism and the Combahee River Collective. I just got this book as a gift, and it has been really wonderful to look back on some of the early organizing work of radical Black feminists. You know, as a queer Black woman, I'm really struck by the power of intersectionality over and over and over again, and also sort of amazed that we don't center it more. So being able to read this text and some of the organizing that they were doing in the 1960s and 70s, it has interviews with like Barbara Smith and Beverly Smith, Alicia Garza. It's really, I've just been into it and kind of marking it up. And I'm also reading Angela Davis's right now, Freedom is a Constant Struggle. So two books that just are helping to anchor the work. I think everybody needs anchors when they work, and these are my folks right now.
Shantina, thanks so much for the work you're doing, and thank you for talking with me today. It's really been fascinating hearing about what you do and the great effect that it's having.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.